Good afternoon.
Good early afternoon, Madam Justice, fellow justices. I'm rising solely to introduce the attorney for the appellants, John Harper, who will handle the oral argument. His pro hoc motion's been approved. He's traveled here from Salt Lake City. He's with the firm in Salt Lake of Anderson and Karenberg.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the court.
May it please the court, again, I'm John Harper, and it's an honor to be here today in front of you. I appreciate it. This is a breach of contract case that requires interpretation of certain key language in Priceline's terms and conditions. As I've been reviewing the briefs, I was struck that, as counsel often do, we may have made this case more complex than it really is. It seems to me that that all the court really needs to do is to consider the plain meaning of the language that's in dispute in the context of two interpretations that are very different. obviously, if the plaintiff's interpretation is unreasonable, then summary judgment was appropriate on that basis. But if the plaintiff's interpretation is reasonable, then summary judgment was not appropriate on that basis because either the language is ambiguous or if plaintiff's interpretation was unreasonable, then the plaintiffs would actually be entitled to a ruling as a matter of law that the contract says what plaintiffs say it says.
So what is the disputed language and what is your interpretation?
Under the contract, if Priceline matches a customer with a hotel room, then Priceline is authorized to charge the user's credit card, quote, for the entire amount of the stay, including relevant taxes and service fees disclosed to the user before submitting an offer. our interpretation of that is that it plainly means that Priceline has authorized, that customers have authorized Priceline to charge their credit cards in two instances. For actual taxes that Priceline collects and is going to pass on to the hotel to be paid to the taxing authority, and for service fees that are disclosed to the user. Our position is that no reasonable interpretation of relevant taxes in any context would permit someone to collect a tax overcharge that they then pocket. Tax is tax, and tax overcharges are not taxes, they're overcharges.
Could I stop you at this point and ask you, since I understand that part of the problem here is that Priceline doesn't actually know what the tax ultimately will be, so it uses some algorithm, and sometimes it gets too low, sometimes it's too high, but if it's too low, Priceline pays the difference, and if it's too high, it's what has been agreed to by the customer anyhow. But so it is my understanding that this is not a simple situation where if Priceline wanted to, it could have given an exactly correct figure. You agree?
Well, yes, I agree in
okay,
the sense.
Okay, well, wait a second, because that's not really what I'm getting at. What I'm getting at is this. Tell me what language should have been in this contract that would have been accurate and that would have not been objectionable as far as you're concerned.
Well, I think that had, in the first place, if Priceline had indicated that that customers authorized them to charge their credit cards for the taxes and service fee charge that was disclosed on the previous page. That in itself would have been very clear. But at the same time, as far as this estimation and so forth that you alluded to, Justice, if if Priceline had said, for example, customers authorize us to charge their credit cards for actual taxes that we collect and pay to the hotels, that would have done it as well. The problem is that Priceline did begin to estimate taxes, but at a certain point in time, when it actually booked the reservation for the hotel, Priceline knew what that, what the amount of that of tax was going to be. But Priceline, under this system, pockets the tax overcharge. And to one customer that's had their taxes estimated high, so that there's what's called a positive trans fee, then there's been a tax overcharge for those customers.
I understand that. What I'm trying to get at is this. As I understand what the trial court said that a customer is told, here's how much the hotel is going to cost you, here's how much the additional fees, taxes, and service fees are going to be. Do you want us to book your hotel or not? If you want us to, we will book it, and this is what you'll be charged. And since that is, in fact, what they were charged, there's no breach of any contract. Now, you object to that conclusion because you say, well, that's not an accurate description of what they're being charged for, right?
The charges, what they're being charged for, include tax overcharges.
Fine. And what I'm trying to get at is this. Tell me what language they could have put in their online or wherever else in their disclosures that would allow them to charge some amount of money for a combination of estimated taxes and service fees that would then be disclosed.
I think they would have to indicate in the contract that the customer authorizes, in the event of positive trans fees or these tax overcharges, that the customer authorizes those overcharges to be charged to their credit card.
Why? Why does a customer care whether it is an actual dollars and cents amount of a tax and an actual dollars and cents amount of a separate service fee versus here's how much extra you're going to have to pay? Why is that of any significance in terms of the material provisions of this contract?
Well, there's a nuance that I'm not sure that the trial court understood, and let me explain that. Priceline doesn't disclose to customers that when they name a price for their hotel room, that is not the price that the hotel is going to be paid for the hotel room. And so what happens is that Priceline, for example, for a period of at least 3 months after they made their restructuring of the taxes and fees that gave rise to this lawsuit, Priceline was charging tax on the amount of the price of the room that the customer named, but was paying to the hotel tax on a lesser amount.
And
customers don't know that. And so when they see a tax and service fees charge, and in the context of this contract language that they're going to be authorizing the charge of relevant taxes and service fees, they don't know that there is this tax overcharge built into that.
Or is it a over-service fee?
Well, that's a good question. It's been, and let me address that. It's an over-tax when it's an estimated tax that is greater than what's paid to the hotel. It's also an overtax when Priceline, which they did for 3 months, charged tax on that customer room rate and then paid tax on a lesser amount. So there are two tax overcharges.
Well, isn't the net effect of that to increase the service fee?
Well, what it does is it includes tax overcharges in a taxes and service fee charge, which customers don't know.
But if they're not paying taxes and they're paying extra money, it's the service fee, isn't it?
Well, no, it's not. It's not a service fee. I mean, it's not. Even the trial court said below that, you know, if Priceline is charging more in tax than simply putting it into a category of fees, that's not appropriate. That's a breach of the contract. And so to overcharge someone in tax, to calculate under this way of doing things that they were doing, to create an overcharge that consumers are not going to be aware of, it's not satisfactory to a consumer to say, well, it just makes your service fees higher.
Well, Mr. Harper, to get back to Justice Berger's question, isn't the critical issue for us what is the nature of the bargain that was entered into? That is, if the nature of the bargain was that the customer, you know, agrees that it will pay not more than a given price, regardless of what expenses are included in that and whether or not they're inflated or not, then there's no contractual violation. Isn't that true?
Well, I think that's exactly right, that the question is the nature of this.
Well,
the contract.
So that much would be, you agree that the nature of the bargain is a critical issue or perspective from our standpoint? Because the other question would be, if the customer really, in this commercial context, has a concern about the actual outlay of Priceline for taxes and service fees, then there would be a basis in the contract to explore that and to perhaps to enforce, if there were some some unauthorized taking of those monies by Priceline.
Yes, but the contract language says that customers authorize the charging of their credit cards for relevant taxes and service fees disclosed.
Actually, relevant taxes and service fees disclosed.
Correct. But relevant taxes wouldn't include tax overcharges.
Well, you say that, but that's because your position is that the contract, in order to authorize what was done here, has to say relevant taxes, including whether or not actually disbursed by Priceline and service fees.
Well, I go back to the point.
Is that right? I mean, that's the kind of language that you're saying has to be in the terms and conditions in order for there to be a contractual foundation for Priceline to charge those monies against the credit card. Is that correct?
Well, if I understand the way you're putting it, may I make sure I understand that
okay
before I say it's correct? I think that when Priceline says relevant taxes, that in itself means actual taxes. It means taxes. It can't mean tax overcharges.
Well, you say that, so, but what is the foundation in the contract or in contract law for that construction?
Well, they have indicated in their contract what the customer authorizes. It's their language, and they don't indicate that the customer authorizes estimated taxes or tax overcharges or...
No, that's true. It doesn't say that at all. It doesn't make any reference to actual taxes. It simply says relevant taxes and service charges disclosed.
Correct.
Doesn't that suggest that that's all that the contract, that's all that the customer can bargain for or has bargained for? That is to pay or not to pay a certain amount that's stipulated or disclosed in the statement of charges.
But we don't think that that language is talking about a specific amount. It's general language where they're saying relevant taxes and service fees disclosed. That's not language saying you authorize us to charge for this specific taxes and service fee charge. Now, after the lawsuit was filed, Priceline went back and changed the language, and they took out relevant, and they capitalized taxes, and they capitalized service fees as though those were defined terms. Now, that's an improvement, but...
Why is it an improvement?
Well, at least they are creating more ambiguity that they may be referring to that tax and service fee.
So the more ambiguous, the better, from their point of view, right?
Ambiguity is important here because it defeats summary judgment.
You're into your rebuttal time, which you're welcome to use, but it's your choice.
I'll reserve a rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Karen Valahura for Priceline.com Incorporated. I have with me Randy Herndon and Dan Shiraki from our office. In our answering brief, we have a detailed description of exactly how the name your own price model works, which I'm not going to detail, but I do want to highlight a few points of the process that go to the fundamental nature of the bargain and the offer and the acceptance. A fundamental aspect of a name your own price bargain is that the customer is willing to let Priceline choose her hotel in return for the customer obtaining very deep discounts that simply are not available to the public otherwise. Another key feature of the name your own price bargain is that customers are presented with their total charges before they submit their offer so that they know exactly what their credit cards will be charged. First, focusing on the offer part of the contract, the customer during the booking process selects one or more neighborhoods and a star level. And in selecting an area, customers may pick an area that may encompass several different taxing jurisdictions. The customer submits an offer price for the reservation and is asked to review the reservation details, including the amount that will be charged on the customer's credit card if the offer is accepted. The contract page shows the subtotal that reflects the offer price, the combined taxes and service fees charge, and the total amount that will be charged to the customer if the offer is accepted. The customer then confirms that she wishes to submit the offer, which is non-refundable.
Can I interrupt just for a minute? Mr. Harper's client appears to be arguing that by using the language relevant taxes and service charges, that is the language that's at issue here, there is some implicit representation being made that those amounts are the precise amounts that, to the extent that we're talking about out-of-pocket costs that were incurred by Priceline. What is your response?
My response is that there is no such representation, Your Honor. What they're really trying to do is splice apart the key language in that payment and security section by taking relevant taxes out of context and trying to create a separate requirement that Priceline charge only relevant taxes on the one hand and service fees disclosed to the user on the other. The phrase taxes and service fees means the amount disclosed to the user on the preceding contract page. It would be irrational to divide the phrase relevant taxes on the one hand and service fees disclosed to the user on the other, because no separate service fees are ever disclosed to the user. There is only a combined charge. Thus, the contract doesn't contain these separate and freestanding obligations. Plaintiffs themselves, even though the court need not consider deposition testimony because the contract is clear, repeatedly admitted that this phrase that Your Honor just referred to, relevant taxes and service fees disclosed to the user, means the amount disclosed on the contract page. For example, Mr. Knight was asked, question, and the relevant taxes and service fees disclosed to the user is the amount that appears under taxes and service fees on Defendant's Exhibit 43, which was his contract page. Answer, that's right. Question, because the amount was disclosed to you before you confirmed your reservation. Answer, that is correct. That's at page B247. Ms. Marshall made similar admissions. Further, they both admitted that they agreed to pay the total charges that had been disclosed. That's at page B307 for Ms. Marshall and B247 for Mr. Knight. They even agreed that they were contractually required to pay the amount disclosed if there had been an underestimation of the tax. For example, Mr. Knight was asked, your contractual obligation was only to pay the amount that was disclosed to the consumer, to you, on the taxes and service fee line. Answer, that's right. That's at page B265. So the Superior Court's comments about what is important to the consumer weren't unfounded statements about speculation. Rather, the court was commenting on the fundamental nature of the bargain that was made, namely, the customer agrees to let Priceline choose their hotel room and agrees to a total amount of charges up front and agrees to a combined taxes and service fees charge. So, go ahead.
So your point is that that language accurately captures and communicates,
yes,
the nature of the bargain to the customer.
Yes.
Would it be fair to say that the language about taxes and service fees, the taxes part of it is in there, in part at least, so that the consumer doesn't say, wow, look at how much they're charging for service fees. Oh, well, that includes taxes, too, and we don't know how much of that is taxes. So if we see a number that otherwise just strikes us as being a little bit greedy, arguably, it takes away from that reaction if you see that it includes taxes and service fees, and that the taxes part was just to explain that that's part of what we have to spend money on.
I think that's fair, Your Honor. And to go back to one of the court's earlier questions, before the customer submits the offer and hits buy my hotel room now, Priceline doesn't know what room will be selected or which taxing jurisdiction the room will be in. Mr. Gordon, who is Priceline's vice president of hotels, was asked, does Priceline know the actual tax before the customer clicks buy the room? Answer, no. Question, is it possible for Priceline to know that information before the customer clicks buy the room? Answer, no. What the plaintiffs are essentially doing here is trying to rewrite the contract so that Priceline has to present an itemized breakdown of that taxes and service fees charge. And
well, let me back up a little bit. Doesn't use of the word relevant suggest that Priceline knows the actual taxes?
I don't believe that's the case at all, Your Honor. I think relevant taxes and service fees means the taxes and service fees that had just been disclosed to the customer on the preceding web page related to their offer. I don't think it states anything about what the...
So it could be any amount whatsoever, whether consistent with reality or not.
I think the fundamental nature of the bargain in this case is that Priceline makes no representation with regard to the calculation of the tax. The customer agrees to the line item charges, and that is the nature of the bargain. If the customer looks at the contract page, the customer can make a determination whether the taxes and service fees charges are unreasonably large and decide not to proceed with the offer at that point.
I thought that your brief said that there are some taxes, such as local city taxes, that are not necessarily included in the category of relevant taxes that are disclosed. Is that correct?
I think what our brief was referring to, we were responding to the allegation by the other side that the pop-up relating to the phrase same taxes made a representation about the specific calculation of taxes. And they had omitted the middle paragraph of that pop-up, which referred to certain local taxes which were not included in the tax recovery charge. The reason for that was, at one point in time, there were certain flat taxes that were not included in the tax databases, and those were presented by the hotel at the end of the...
But that's not the case now?
I don't believe it is.
So, in other words, under the algorithm and the new system, which I guess is currently in effect, all of the taxes would be captured and in the disclosure of the price that will be charged?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. What the plaintiffs are really asking the court to do is to rewrite the contract so that Priceline can't immediately charge the customer up front. That, however, conflicts with the contract page, which states, quote, "If a hotel accepts your price, Priceline will immediately charge your credit card the total cost of your stay." That's at page B572. Also, the terms immediately above the payment and securities section say, quote, "Once a Priceline request for a hotel room is submitted, it cannot be modified." We don't think it is appropriate to imply a breakdown of taxes and service fees into this contract, or a requirement that there be such itemization, because implied contractual obligations are terms that clearly would have been included in the contract had the parties negotiated with respect to them. That's clearly not the case with Priceline.
Would this contract be any different if the language were to the effect of this is how much your hotel charge will be, and this is the amount of additional Priceline charges, or whatever you'd want to call them. This is the additional charge you will have to pay if you agree to these combined charges. We'll book your hotel.
Well, I think that was similar to the system that was in effect prior to May 13, 2003, where Priceline charged a flat service fee. At the latest, it was $5.95. And then told the customer simply, your tax charges will range on an average of 12%, but generally no higher than 20% of the offer.
What I'm saying is, couldn't Priceline absorb into its designation of additional fees whatever the taxes were going to be, and say, here's how much your hotel room will cost, which is what you bid on it, and here's how much the additional fees will be in connection with that hotel room and with our services that we're providing to you. And here's the total. If you want to pay it, fine. If you don't, fine. I mean, in other words, couldn't Priceline ignore any reference to taxes and still impose a fee as part of the agreement that is going to cover taxes and other expenses?
I think it could call the tax recovery charge something else, because in effect, it's really not a tax. It's a charge to cover the amount of tax that Priceline expects to pay over to the hotel. it could denominate it differently, I suppose. But what it can't do is tell the customer up front at the time they make their offer what the precise amount will be, whether you call it a tax or something else.
Well, I guess what I'm having trouble with is this. There's a hotel charge and there's this extra charge. And right now the extra charge is denominated relevant taxes and service charge, right, or service fee. And there's a total number for that designation. That could just be called miscellaneous fees or extra charges or price line charges or anything else. And it could encompass both taxes and service fee, and you're at the same bottom line, aren't you?
It could well do that. I don't think that that necessarily makes for a better contract. And I think the issue here is, do we have a breach of contract here? And I think the answer is no, because the customer clearly agrees to a line item taxes and service fees charge, as both of their plaintiffs testified to.
Well, the hypothetical that was the subject of Justice Berger's question was an expression that was more vague than the one that is actually at issue in this case. As long as the customer, I think your answer is yes, whether or not it would be a good business practice, apart from that, Priceline could have described the additional fees, that is, whatever fees the customer would have to pay on top of the hotel price, in that way, without being in breach of any contract, because the nature of the contract is such that all the customer is bargaining for is a hotel room at a given total price.
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
So the nature of the disclosure is not particularly relevant as long as it's calculated to capture and communicate the essence of the bargain that's the subject of the contract.
I think that's exactly right, Your Honor. I wanted to take a few minutes and talk about the variable processing fee claim, if I might. There is absolutely no evidence that the variable component of the Priceline processing fee is somehow a tax. Mr. Soder was Priceline's 30B6 witness on this topic, not Mr. Gordon, as they maintain. Mr. Gordon was deposed in July of 2008, and this claim wasn't even asserted until months after his deposition. The discovery directed to this claim was sent out in October 2008, namely the fourth set of interrogatories that we responded to. And in those written interrogatories, we said quite clearly that the components of the processing fee are not the result of some algorithm or some estimated tax. The plaintiffs then wanted some additional discovery. They wanted additional deposition testimony. And we put up Mr. Soder, who is Priceline's vice president of North American travel, who was deposed on November 12, 2008, for several hours. He was the one that was responsible for this change in May 2003 in the fee structure. And he said quite clearly when he was asked how the variable processing fee was calculated, he said, I mean, it's not calculated. It's a number. It's just a percent. That's at page B378. The number was set to make sure there wasn't a negative elasticity effect, a negative effect on demand. And he testified further that the variable processing fee was really designed to try to capture the credit card interchange fee of 3%. The bottom line is the plaintiffs did get answers to their questions, just answers that didn't support their claim. What they do at the end of their reply brief is make a bald assertion that the variable processing fee of 3.25% was designed to make up for the illegal practice of basing the tax charge on the offer price. First, there was no such practice because for the history of Priceline, the tax charge was based on the underlying net rate, except for an 8 to 12 week period following the change in May 2003, while Priceline worked out how to do this estimation methodology to calculate an estimated tax rate and an estimated net rate. As for the charge that it's illegal, the only two federal circuit courts in this country to rule on the tax claims affirmed dismissals of the claims against the online travel companies. We prevailed. We also prevailed in the California case, which plaintiffs in this case said they based their tax allegations on the Los Angeles case, which had been filed 2 months prior to this case. And the court in California just ruled in Priceline's favor on the merits in that case. So there is nothing illegal here. Finally, their math is wrong. They said the variable processing fee multiplied by the markup approximates 3.25%. They say the markup is 26.53%. It's not. It's nowhere near that. On their transactions, it's more like 14%. And the testimony in this case is that the margin is typically 8 to 12%. Mr. Soder testified to that, as did Mr. Gordon. So there is absolutely no evidence to say that the variable processing fee is, in effect, a tax. And even if the variable processing fee had been calculated as a function of a tax, that wouldn't make it a tax. For example, if a restaurant patron calculated a tip based on twice the amount of sales tax, one couldn't say that the restaurant collected additional sales tax from that customer. It just doesn't follow. With regard to the hidden service fee claim, that claim is largely based on the same problems with the contractual construction as the tax claim. It's based on the payment and security section and trying to splice apart that language in the same fashion to try to create a separate obligation to simply disclose service fees. Again, that's not what that section says. And moreover, their own testimony, when asked about that, supports the notion that the taxes and service fees disclosed to the user simply meant the amount disclosed on the contract page. Finally, their hidden service fee claim doesn't make any sense because no reasonable consumer would expect a company to have to disclose its profits. That's what the Sanchez case said. That's what the Orbitz case said, which was a similar case brought by many of the same counsel against Orbitz. My time is up, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Time really flies when you're having fun. Let me be very quick in response. We need to look at what's really going on here. By going to this new calculation, Priceline increased its revenue virtually overnight by 40%. The reason that we just heard today was pretextual, or at least one can reasonably infer that it was pretextual. Priceline says it was to cover this credit card processing fee. The fact is that for a year, Priceline had been covering that credit card processing fee out of this additional compensation that it's making out of the front end, like hotels do. Hotels don't charge some kind of a service fee to cover their credit card processing fees. The fact is that they went to this new way, this restructuring, and increased revenue 40%.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong is the way they did it. They allayed consumer concerns by using language such as relevant taxes. If consumers had any idea that they were being overcharged in taxes, and they were. It's admitted that Priceline used the variable processing fee for the first 3 months of the restructuring to charge tax on the customer's room rate and then pocketed that extra tax. That's admitted. When they stopped doing that, they increased the variable processing fee to an amount that maintained that revenue level. If customers had any idea that there were tax overcharges and that there was an additional service fee in the room rate, then customers might not have gone forward with the transaction. And so, again, Priceline used language in its contract to allay any concerns like this so that customers would go forward with the transaction, assuming that they're paying proper, relevant, actual, whatever taxes.
Well, Mr. Howard, it sounds like you're arguing this as though it were a commercial tort case or a securities disclosure case. This is not about disclosures unless the disclosure misrepresents or omits some key term about the fundamental nature of the bargain.
I agree.
And
with
so,
that.
You know, we keep on coming back to the at least the problem that I see, which is that I don't understand how all of this relates to the contractual issue here.
And my point, Your Honor, is that they used the contract language in order to do what it is that you're discussing in terms of this commercial misrepresentation. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Looking at my time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take this matter under advisement and we will adjourn.